Okay. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us at the 2022 BRP Session 2 meeting. So we'll be covering today the follow-up on the business initiatives and the preliminary forecasts and budget. So we've just got some notices here. So the first notice is about transparency and that your participation is voluntary. And then the second paragraph is that this information is collected in accordance with Section 33 of the Freedom of Information and Protection and Policy Act. And you if you have any questions or concerns, there's some contact information for you.
Yeah. And Karen, we will be recording the session and posting it up on our website.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I'm Karen Campbell. I'm the Director of Business Planning, Settlement and Credit. And we'll just go through the list here in order and everyone will introduce themselves.
Well, good morning, everybody. It's Mike Law, President and CEO of the ISO. Welcome to the 2022 BRP process.
Good morning. I'm Nicole Kinch. I'm the Vice President of Finance. I echo that. Welcome.
Good morning, Bill Baker, Vice President, Information Technology.
Good morning and welcome everyone. I'm Miranda Keating Erickson, the Vice President of Markets.
Hi, good morning, Dennis Frelick here, VP of Grid Reliability. Welcome.
Hello and good morning. I'm Pauline McLean, Vice President Law for the ISO.
Good morning, everyone. It's Kevin Dawson. I'm the Director of Forecasting and Analytics.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome. I'm Pam Trediak. I'm the Director of Finance, Accounting and Treasury.
Hi, everyone. Sohail Academy Forecast Analyst.
Hi, and I'm Carla Anderson. I'm a Senior Advisor, Stakeholder Relations.
Okay, thank you. So the purpose of this particular session is to have a discussion on the first session that we had. So we'll have the feedback and our proposed plans based on the information that you provided in your comments. The purpose as well is to provide the preliminary forecasts and budgets to you. So the session objectives are to share our learnings on the 2022 BRP Session 1 stakeholder feedback, present and discuss and seek stakeholder input on ISO's consideration of stakeholder feedback and plans for proposed 2022 business initiatives. So we'll be looking for additional comments on this presentation as part of the process. So we'll be looking for feedback on what we provide today in response to the business initiatives, and then also to present, discuss, and seek your stakeholder input on the 2022 preliminary forecast and budget information. So that will include the transmission operating forecast and ISO owned cost budget. So this is our agenda. We've done the welcome and introductions and purpose of the session. Then we'll get into just an overview of the process. And then we'll get into the feedback on the business initiative. So we'll share what we heard and how we plan to proceed. And then we'll get into the 2022 preliminary forecasts and budgets, and then session closeout and next step. So this is scheduled to go till 11:30. So you're familiar likely with our ISO stakeholder engagement framework, which includes our engagement principles, which are to be inclusive and accessible, strategic and coordinated, transparent and timely, customized and meaningful. Stakeholder participation. The participation of everyone is critical to the engagement process. To ensure everyone has the opportunity to participate, we ask you to listen to understand others' perspectives, disagree respectively, balance airtime fairly, keep an open mind. So there's two ways you can ask your question. If you have any questions or comments, you can raise your hand. So you select the hand icon, and then we'll take you off mute and you'll be able to ask your question. That's kind of, I think, the preferred way to ask some questions if you have them, because we'll have more of a dialogue. But you definitely have the option, if you like, to just type your question into the chat. So if you can, in either case, provide the organization that you work for and your name, that would be appreciated. And you can do a combination of that as well. If you start with typing your question in, you could also follow up by raising your hand, and we'll unmute you if you have want to elaborate or you have want to provide additional context, so you can ask your questions however you prefer. Okay, this is our list of registrants as of September 22nd. So the 2022 budget review process, I won't go into detail on this diagram. It's the process slide that we had in the first session, but basically we've got the three sessions. We've got opportunities for feedback, comments. You've also got the opportunity to meet with the board at the end of the process and present your information that you'd like to provide to them. And then on the left-hand side, the blue is more the steps of what we do. So developing the business initiatives, developing the own cost budget and forecast, and then preparing the business plan. Okay. This again is, you should be familiar with this, timeline here. So, the top part of it is the engagement sort of steps, and then the bottom part has the stakeholder timing. So all the timeline is in there for your actions, which would be on the bottom, and then our actions are on the top, the actual engagement and then the feedback. Okay, what we heard and how we plan to proceed. So based on the August 26th meeting, thank you very much for your comments. We had some really great, thoughtful comments there that really provided some valuable information for us to understand your perspectives, and also to provide us the opportunity to clarify some things and provide you additional information on the business initiatives. So this is just, we had this in our last presentation as well. This is an overview of the business initiatives. So it's when they start, and some of them may have started a bit before, but as an actual business initiative, and then when we expect them to end based on now, the information that we have now. And this is just a snapshot in time of right now, because there could be additional business initiatives added for 2023. So this is just the current snapshot. So these are the questions we asked you to consider. So these were in the comment matrix, which we sent out at the end of the last process. And I'll just reiterate that everything is posted on our website. So we send, we're not sending emails with the stakeholder matrix. Everything will be posted there. Our presentations are posted there. All of the information in the business planning section of the website. So these were the questions. As we reviewed the status and next steps of the 2021 multi-year business initiatives and presented the initial proposed 2022 business initiatives, questions we asked you to consider. What are your views of the proposed next steps and milestones of the 2021 multi-year business initiatives? So those are the business initiatives. They were already in progress last year, and they'll be carried into next year. What are your views on the initial proposed 2022 business initiatives that ISO's recommended to advance? So we just had the one grid resiliency business initiative for 2022 that's brand new, not a multi-year, that hadn't already started. It will be multi-year, but just hadn't started prior to this year. What are your views on the priority levels of these business initiatives? And do you believe there may be business initiatives the ISO should be advancing, which have not already been captured? If so, what would these be? So I'll hand it over to Miranda to address the GTA.
Thanks very much, Karen. And good morning, everyone. And I would like to start by echoing Karen's comments about the time and effort that you all took to give us very thoughtful comments and things to consider. I'm going to start with the general tariff application, which was our 2018 general tariff application, to be specific, which we have called complete for this year and will not be proceeding into the 2022 business plan and budget. But I do want to echo some of the things that we heard from you. I think there was a little bit of a debate about us calling this done. I do want to make a commitment that the specific actions that still remain to be implemented are absolutely a priority for us. They just sort of don't fall into that broad umbrella of a big initiative, but certainly for the tariff team and for a number of other folks across the ISO, these are very, very high on their priority lists to the end of 2021 and into 2022. Generally, I think we heard that timeliness of the more operational tariff filings like rate updates in advance is really important to you, and we've heard you, and we will continue to file those in advance. We also will continue to try to simplify those kinds of regulatory processes around those more operational things to reduce the amount of reading time you all have to do and reduce the amount of effort that has to be put into those and keep them timely. On the couple of specific initiatives, we absolutely will continue to work on the implementation plan for the adjusted metering practice with DFOs and TFOs and ensure that we have a plan that is considered both timelines and cost and is implementable and that everybody can work with. And then on the second piece, we have a plan this fall to engage with DFOs specifically and industry stakeholders more generally on our criteria for initiation of system transmission projects, which was one more direction that we're following up on from this specific tariff decision. And so we will wrap up those specific things and keep them a priority to make sure that they get done. And we will continue to try to simplify and be more timely on an ongoing basis in terms of our tariff applications. I'm going to move to the next one, unless there are specific questions about the 2018 tariff application. And otherwise, I'm just going to keep us moving along. I think what we heard from on this market sustainability and evolution, and maybe what I took away from it, is that there is perhaps a lack of clarity for folks about what we're talking about in terms of priorities here. And so I do want to take just a minute to clarify. In terms of the scope of this initiative, this is actually quite narrow at this point in time. We have three specific things that are underway. That we are committing to complete. And so one of those is completing the review and fixing as needed of the mothball rule, which has been underway. The second is the review of our OR market. And the review there, I want to be very specific, is particularly about how can we enhance competition in that market. So it's looking at, are there barriers to participation? Are there ways that that market could be made more efficient? We aren't looking at sort of a broad redesign of the OR market. It really is quite narrowly focused on opportunities to increase competition and increase participation in that market. And you will be seeing something coming from us over the next couple of months around that. And then I think the third piece is, in addition to what will show up on other slides in this deck around rules for new technologies, moving forward with the storage rules that you've all helped us to develop, those kinds of things. But it's also continuing to do monitoring and analysis of our market and of updated forecasts as to how the marketplace is changing and what implications that could have on the functioning of our market. And, you know, this is work that I've been at the ISO since 2010. I think we started doing this work in 2011. We always, you know, at least once every couple of years, we're updating assessments of the price cap and price floor. You know, I think we've done that four times in the time that I've been at the ISO. This is all about making sure we can see things coming. And if there is a need for change, getting moving on that change before it's too late, because as we all know, any kind of change takes time. So the examples that we've given here, or that we had given in the last slide deck, that I think we had some feedback from folks that were concerned that we were moving forward with big change. The examples were really things that we think could be potential changes that might come out of those assessments. But our first priority is really on the assessment. And so updating our system flexibility assessment report that we published last year, based on the new long-term outlook that we published this year, updating our other analysis. You know, we every quarter we update our long-term adequacy analysis. We update our revenue sufficiency analysis every time we have a new a change in our forecast. These system flexibility assessments, these are all analyses that we have on our plate as part of our role of monitoring the success of the market, monitoring the sustainability of the market, and flagging where we think we see there may be risk and we may need to look at some kind of a change. My commitment to you is that where we do see something and we flag that we may need to make some kind of a change, we won't proceed with actual change without a very fulsome engagement and without discussions with all of you, without a thorough assessment of how real that risk is, what the expected timeline of that risk materializing might be, and what the potential solutions might be to manage that risk. And so that's my ongoing commitment to you. And if there are no questions on that, I think I'm handing things over to Nicole. Nicole, you're on mute.
Yeah.
No, I usually don't get hit by that. Thank you, Miranda, very much. Moving on to the settlement audit, then it sounds like we have no further questions on the previous slides. In regards to the settlement audit, what we did here was that, you know, generally a lot of support for completing the audit in 2022, which we do intend to do. There was also some support for the settlement audit become part of our ongoing business. So, of course, we do plan on integrating that as part of our base business and performing regularly SOC audits, the frequency of which will be determined. Finally, there was some information, some great questions and concerns about the scope of the audit. In the replies to the stakeholder comments from the August 26th session, we did provide some more detail around the audit in that it is considered an audit over internal controls. It does comply with Canadian standards on assurance engagements. And with those, there's a general process for identifying the scope of controls that are within our control of the ISO. So we also provided a diagram, which is in the subsequent slide. I generally won't go through it in detail here unless people have some specific questions, but it does talk to what inputs are coming into our system, what is being tested, essentially, the risks, the controls that are being looked at, the subsystems that we have added to this. So those subsystems that we noted in the last session were to ensure that the scope is very thorough and complete on the engagement that we're managing right now, and that's the energy market and transmission settlement. We did also hear that we wanted some more insight as to how that process is going, what the timing is. So we will be providing updates in our quarterly stakeholder report published on the ISO website to let you know the status of this. And then also, you know, to make sure we share those results, we will share the post-audit report to stakeholders upon request and subject to non-disclosure agreement. Do you have any questions on the settlement audit? Okay, I will hand it over then to Pauline.
We've got a question from Victoria.
Victoria?
We'll go ahead and unmute Victoria.
Victoria, you'll just have to unmute on your end. So, Victoria, we have, we've enabled your mic, but I believe there's just, you'll just have to, turn your mic on to speak.
And if that's not working, you'll need to type your comment or question.
Yeah. And we did do some investigation at the last session with IT, and if you seem to be having some issues, sometimes the easiest solution is just to leave the meeting and come back right in, and that seems to fix the mic problem. So, yeah. All right. Sorry about that, Victoria. Doesn't seem like that's working for you.
Try. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll wait for her either to leave the meeting and come back in to ask the question. And then we can get back.
I can always address it as we get towards the end of the presentation, if that works. So we can move on.
Yeah. Thanks, Nicole.
Okay. Hello again, everybody, and good morning. So with respect to red tape reduction this morning, just a few comments for me to highlight in response to the various comments received. The first one being, again, because this program is mandated for us, it continues to be important for the organization to drive towards the ultimate 33% reduction target within the context of the government's program. And, you know, I would say that in the early days of the program, we did prioritize our reviews of certain documents and processes and whatnot that were associated with higher requirement counts. But certainly moving forward, given our requirements are quite peanut butter spread across our various rules and information documents and forms and whatnot on our website, really we think the way to address this work is just to do it through other initiatives that are already ongoing. So there will be sort of a bolt-on red tape reduction type of activity associated with most of the activities that the ISO, again, already has in flight. So it's less, I guess, standalone compared to what it was in the first 6 to 12 months of the program. Separate and apart from the government RTR program specifically, I would say that we are very open and motivated to review other areas of the business to explore what could be streamlined or, again, where we can reduce burden for market participants. And so it appears we've had a meeting of the minds with respect to a couple of comments received where there were proposals around loss factors and potentially simplifying the methodology for those. I think, again, those are quite they float to the top of our list, so to speak, of areas to dig into. There was another comment about Alberta reliability standards. And on that one, I would agree. I think there are some opportunities, I'll call it on the back end, compliance monitoring side of things. And as well, I think there may be some things we should consider as part of how those standards are developed in the first instance, who's caught, who falls into the applicability of those standards. And so that's something, again, that that's on our list of things to do. There was a third comment as well on the DAR, and that, again, is something that Nicole, I know, is quite motivated to look at. And so thanks for your feedback on those. And again, it's good to know that we have a meeting of the minds on those particular initiatives from a regulatory burden perspective. In terms of some of the questions around the breakdown of what we believe our forecast savings are as a result of the changes that we've made, I did sort of break that down for everybody in the stakeholder comments. And again, sort of similar to what I had said a few weeks ago, most of those savings, again, are sort of based on avoided costs associated with site trips or needing certain equipment on based on our rules, et cetera, et cetera. And so, again, hopefully that breakdown was helpful for stakeholders in the replies. As a final comment, and again, to respond to some of the feedback received, I know that it's important to stakeholders that they have visibility, ongoing visibility, I'll call it, of where we think we are driving some of those savings as a result of work that we're undertaking in this area. And so certainly, again, we'll commit to trying to be more forthcoming with that information through the website so that you can sort of see more so in real time what that work is resulting in. So those were my comments this morning in this area, and I'm happy to take questions, of which there looks to be one from Rob.
All right, Rob, we've enabled your mic. You'll just have to unmute yourself.
Okay, can you hear me? Oh, perfect.
We can.
Okay, good morning. Rob Senko with AltaLink. Really appreciate the opportunity to provide comments in the ISO's 22 business initiative. So thank you for that. Good to see you again, Pauline. It's been a while.
It has. Nice to hear from you, though.
Yeah. Just a comment here. So thank you for recognizing our comment with regards to the ARS compliance monitoring. Just want to see what, you know, you talked about exploring these areas with market participants, but I'm not sure what that means for, like, what is the process for bringing this forward, because it is a big concern within our organization, and we really want to make sure that this does get on the radar and that it's open. I think other market participants would probably say the same thing, that this is an area of concern. We're spending a lot of money on it, and it's trickling down to ratepayers as well. So this is something from like a holistic view that could save a lot of dollars, not only for ratepayers, but other industry players. So just wanted to understand more about how that will actually be brought up in 2022 or even later this year to start moving on how do we get industry moving forward on this and the ISO.
No, thanks for your question, Rob. And I don't know if I have the specific answer for you today in terms of exactly how we're going to bring it forward. But what I would say is that I don't think it's something we can do in a vacuum or in a silo by ourselves. And so I think, again, you can expect in some way, shape or form, we'll be tapping on industry probably, I would think, in 2022. Because I think, again, depending on where we get to on this, it could be quite a shift. And so, again, I just want to make sure that we've sort of structured our thinking in terms of how we would want to move this forward appropriately. But again, I can commit that it wouldn't be something that we would do in a back room without visibility or input from industry.
Okay. So just to make sure that should we still be pushing this forward through this process, or would it be some other process? Because I just want to make sure that, you know, we don't continue to harp on this or provide some presentation to your board if this is going to actually be looked at next year, because I don't want to waste your time or bring this up inadvertently.
Well, I think to that, I'd say that the comment's been heard. It's something that we've been having some conversations on internally over the last 3 months or so in terms of how to initiate this. So I think I can tell you I've certainly heard it. So I don't know, again, how else you were continuing to perhaps wanting to advance or discuss this, but I've heard the comment, and I will certainly be taking it away as part of the feedback received.
Okay, perfect. I'll bring that back in the organization. So I really appreciate your comments. Thanks.
Well, thanks, Rob.
Okay, we've got a comment from Luis. Is the ISO introducing RTR criteria, i.e. reduced requirements, into the development of new rules, for example, energy storage rules and tariff, example, modernization of DOS?
So I'll answer that question based on sort of what I understand, Luis, but you can let me know whether or not I'm barking up the right tree. So I would say, you know, moving forward again, once we get to a 33% sort of overall reduction in the government's program, we basically sort of will be stuck with a one in, one out type of mentality. So in terms of, you know, again, how we're structuring our documents and whatnot, we've really had to absorb and embed that as part of our everyday as we're creating rules. So I would say, I don't know if I think about it as a criteria, but more so as a lens and an approach in terms of how we're thinking about red tape, so to speak. So again, I don't know if that helps answer your question, but it's more just about, again, how it is that we go about our work and structure our rules in the first place. We're pretty mindful, again, of the types of requirements that we're putting in our rules.
That looks like we've got a question from Chris. Chris, I've enabled your mics. You'll just have to unmute yourself on your side.
Morning, everybody. Chris McLeod from NMAX. Hi, Pauline, and good morning, everybody. I just have a question, and maybe you can shed a little bit of more light on this for us, Pauline, is when we were thinking more about red tape reduction efforts, we were obviously thinking a little bit about efficiencies and staff cost decreasing at the ISO, potentially, as a result of red tape reduction efforts. Have you guys sort of benchmarked that or have been able to sort of quantify it a little bit in terms of staff reduction costs on the inside of the ISO as a result of some of these red tape reduction efforts? Because I think from our perspective, the two biggest things in terms of cost reductions were in the past around the capacity market, when the capacity market work had stopped because that was such a huge focus of everybody's time and effort at the time. And then we saw this red tape reduction priority as another big opportunity to find some efficiencies as well. So just curious if you can sort of shed some light on that and provide some perspective and thoughts.
I can certainly try, Chris. So I think, you know, again, as part of this effort, there's a balance to be had in terms of trying to do all of the administrative, you know, watching where we're reducing, where we're adding, et cetera, trying to track certain cost savings and whatnot. And those cost savings, again, we have made an attempt to quantify those both externally as well as internally. But the bigger priority, again, has been on the externally facing savings, given those are the ones that market participants, again, hopefully should benefit from moving forward. So that has been more so the focus. I think for us, in terms of some of the internal savings, I mean, how we would view that is if we have some streamlining efficiencies that we've gained, it means that we can devote those resources to other higher priority work. And so really for us internally, it's a matter of how we shift our people around and what we have them working on, or potentially, again, how we can potentially drive some savings through consulting costs and whatnot by having internal people work on some of those efforts. So again, that's sort of, if your question was more at why do you not have five less FTEs or four less FTEs as part of that work, again, hopefully that addresses the nature of that question. So again, it's really about what we have our people working on and when, and the majority, again, to date, of savings that we've focused on are all of those that are externally facing. Does that help answer your question, Chris?
I think so. I think just a little bit of context in terms of where the priority has been. And do you see, you know, given the fact it sounds like this is going to be, you know, become part of ongoing base business for the ISO, will that focus grow over time? And I guess from our perspective, you know, even though there has been that sort of external focus right out of the gate, it probably would be helpful. I hear what you're saying about reallocating resources on other top priorities, but it would be helpful to better understand if there are potential opportunities for internal cost savings at the ISO as well, to just more clearly understand, you know, how much of a priority is that and where potentially in the future some of those savings could be found as this sort of moves along. So, but no, thanks for your comments.
No, that's something that we can take back and think about. I suppose the other comment I'd have too is that, you know, I think driving efficiencies has got to be part of our DNA and something that we're always thinking about. But again, when I think of the curve of what that looks like, it's not something, again, where you're going to be able to make sort of endless drives in efficiency, because there always will be sort of a base level, again, of sort of requirements and work that we have to do internally. But I will certainly take that back and think about, you know, again, how we can perhaps make some of those efficiencies more visible to industry on the internal side.
Perfect. Thanks.
All right, Pauline, looks like you answered all the questions.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay, good morning. Hopefully my mic's working. Thanks for all the feedback that I received. I went through all the comments. I'm not going to go through this slide in detail. I would ask if I've missed responding to any specific comments, please just bring that up here now, and then I can address that in this conversation. I've provided a fair bit of detail on how we're planning to proceed based on the feedback. And so I'm just going to highlight a couple items here that I think are important based on the feedback I received. On the transmission capability mapping, we've been working this year on developing the methodology and the approach to which we can determine the capability down at the substation level, fairly complex approach. And we're pretty close to completing that work. So I am intending either late this year in December or late November to share with industry that methodology and approach that we've developed and get feedback on that. And then in early 2022, we would share the preliminary results of that methodology and analysis down at the substation level and get, again, input from industry and market participants on the results and any improvements that the industry might see in that space. So that's kind of the plan and timing there. The next one I'll highlight is dynamic line rating technologies. I am working right now to launch a cross-functional team internally here at the ISO that crosses market, EMS, operations, planning, etc., to go through scoping and assessing what I would call the business case opportunity in 2022 to determine what dynamic thermal line rating capability or methodology is available out there that could be applicable here in Alberta. Again, it needs to be repeatable and implementable for me. And so 2022 is to assess the business case and get to a decision point on the path forward for implementation 2023. We will, again, engage in that work in 2022 as we progress that out. I just want to emphasize the cross-functional team will not be a dedicated team. This is, again, about prioritizing resources on these initiatives. And so it'll be incremental work for them, but we're going to place the focus of those resources on this initiative here in 2022. The other is in our long-term plan that we're working right now that we will launch and provide in early 2022. We are putting together a fairly high-level process. Consider it the starting point as to how to provide opportunity for earlier stakeholder input into the planning process, primarily for larger system needs, which are the higher cost implications. And then we'll use the, as we go through the LTP and get feedback on the LTP, I'll be looking for any feedback on that high level process and any improvements on that that we can implement into 2022 and go forward in that respect. The other one I'll highlight is the transmission utilization. I have been working, I've had a small team thinking through and assessing what I would call the suitable annual metrics that provide good information on transmission utilization. And we will want to engage industry later this year or again early Q1 next year with our thinking on those metrics as a starting point, and getting feedback on those metrics so that going forward we can again have a repeatable update on that. I would propose likely an annual update on utilization information. But again, I want to ensure that the metrics are effective and are providing the right information out to industry in this space. I do find everybody has a different perspective of what transmission utilization is about. And for us as an ISO, we have an obligation to obviously deal with N-1 contingencies on the system, and that does have a definite impact on utilization metrics. So I'm going to start with that conversation here later this year or early next year, and then we'll work it in 2022 to move with alignment so that we can then have metrics available at the end of 2022 or early 2023 that we can work with as an industry going forward. And then obviously last part here is our plans in 2022 in this space will be influenced by whatever the Department of Energy comes out with from a bulk system planning engagement, and we'll adjust accordingly based on what the DOE comes out with in that space. So we're cognizant of that work that's going on, and we'll see what unfolds once they're complete with that decision making from a policy perspective. So those are the ones I wanted to highlight. If there's any questions on our plans in this space, I'll take them now. So Ed, go ahead.
Ed, you just have to unmute yourself.
All right. You can hear me, Dennis?
I can, Ed.
Great. Just wondering if you could provide any color around the ISO's comments to the DOE in the bulk system conversation. And I think I read that you were looking for more flexibility in system planning. So could you provide some color on what it is the ISO would want?
Well, I think, Ed, what I will communicate is I don't think we're going to share specifically the information that we've offered to the DOE in this space, just like other stakeholders, that's for the DOE. That said, it's not a secret that we have been communicating to industry and others from a non-wires alternative perspective that we're looking to have more flexibility in the use of non-wires alternatives in our planning. And so that's one area. You can separate it from the DOE engagement, but that's one area that we're seeking some flexibility on. And there it's like, the current regulations are fairly specific as to where we can apply non-wires alternatives. And in that space, we're looking for technology agnostic capability and application. And obviously, non-wires alternatives actually have to work for the need that we're trying to address. But that's one area that we're seeking some flexibility in.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Hi, this is Karen. I've got some questions from Victoria that she sent to me by email.
Okay.
So I'll start with the one for Dennis. Can you let us know what you are going to do so renewables can see where to locate on the existing system? Please be explicit.
Okay. Thanks, Victoria. To be explicit, the transmission capability mapping will be the explicit information to all market participants as to the current level of capability at the substation level that generation can connect at that location. So the methodology we are working through is to provide under normal system conditions how much incremental generation can connect at that substation and the system can accommodate it. And it'll be at the substation level. And so what we've done is we've started that methodology and capability in the, I'll call it the renewable rich part of the province to prioritize on, because we think that's obviously the place to provide the most value right now, is to give that capability indication at the substation level in those regions. As with any complex analysis, the capability levels, and we'll have it at whatever voltage levels are at those substations, and we'll have it in megawatts of capability. It will be indicative. It's not going to be precise. And so it will provide for various substations, here's how much room we currently have before we bump up against infrastructure requirements at a megawatt level, for generation integration at those substations. And we started with generation integration, given that we see that as the highest value information to provide out to the market versus load-driven capability. The load-driven capability will next on our priority list as we work this methodology forward. So hopefully, Victoria, that answers your question specifically. Okay. If it doesn't, you can reach out to me, Victoria, and we can discuss whatever remaining.
Okay, and then on the settlement audit, in other jurisdictions, ICES do not require stakeholders to sign NDAs to see the audit reports. Can you explain why the ISO plans to require one?
Over to you, Nicole.
Thank you, Dennis. Certainly this is something, Victoria, we can explore further, and I appreciate the question. Generally, a lot of the information that is provided around our systems, it's just a process of being very conservative and careful about the information we're sharing externally. We want to be forthcoming and open about the results of our audits and anything that we're undergoing. However, we just want to be careful about sharing information regarding our systems. And that's the reason for the concern. Certainly, I'm open to further questions on that, and I can, again, follow up with you further if you'd like.
Yeah, and I think some other ISOs might provide the reports, but they strip out quite a bit of detail, and then they may not require the NDA, but we would like to provide, not strip it out too far. So I think that's kind of an option that we can maybe look at what the other ISOs are doing as well. But
absolutely. Thank you, Karen.
Perfect.
Thank you, Victoria.
All right, there.
Rob.
A question from Rob. You go ahead, Rob.
Good morning, Dennis.
Morning, Rob.
Just a quick question on congestion reporting. If you could just explain why the ISO doesn't provide the amount of congestion that's taken place on the interties.
The amount of congestion that takes place on the interties. Maybe you can just elaborate on what you're referring to there, Rob.
Well, total congestion on the transmission system. But does the ISO, from my knowledge, doesn't kind of identify the different ties and kind of what kind of congestion is on them, if there's needing to be reinforcements on there? Based on like the 2002 policy paper for the T-regs that was to get the ties back to their rating. So I would see that as being, not up to its capacity, and there would be congestion on that tie.
Okay, I think I'm somewhat understanding the question from a rating perspective. We can look at that approach for tie lines. Obviously, there's physical rating capability that is different than ultimate design rating capability on the ties. And so we'd need to go through, and I can have this conversation with you, Rob, to make sure I'm understanding what you're seeking. We'd need to go through to get clear on what indicators would qualify for, and I'm going to put in quotes, congestion information sure. on the Intertie. So how about we take that one offline?
Sure.
And,
yeah.
And I
sure,
can,
we can. I can give
yeah,
you a
have
call.
A follow-up. Yeah, have a follow-up conversation on that so I can better understand what you're seeking.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you.
Okay. I'll just make a note of that.
All right. And Dennis, it looks like the questions for this section are covered. So we'll move over to tariff modernization. Miranda.
Hey, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Carla. And I'm going to be relatively quick on this one because I think we've had so many conversations for the last not only months, but years on this. We've definitely heard all of the great comments, I think, through the stakeholder process on the Balkan regional rate design. We know that there isn't broad agreement necessarily on lots of areas within certainly this portion of tariff modernization. We do have a direction from the AUC to file this module of our tariff by October 15th. And so that clearly sets us up for a fair bit of effort and work next year as we work our way through a proceeding there. In terms of other pieces of tariff modernization, you know, we've been saying that the next module that we intend to look at is customer contribution policy. I think we heard lots of comments from folks that with, you know, the DOE doing some engagement on a variety of policy items from storage to self-supply and export to their bulk planning engagement, certainly any regulation changes that come out as a result of those, it will be top on our priority list to assess the implications of those. Clearly, given some of the questions they've been asking in their engagements, some potential changes, the tariff will be the mechanism for implementing those. And so we will, of course, be flexible in terms of our plans and our timing and our prioritization of different aspects should we get regulatory change that requires us to shift something different to the top of the list or to pause something that we're working on in order to incorporate a change to the regulatory framework. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone may have or to hand things back to Dennis.
Oh, we do have a question from Evan. Evan, I've allowed your mic. You just have to unmute yourself.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Hopefully you could hear me.
I can now. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Miranda. Hi, Miranda. How are you?
I'm well.
It's Evan of IPSA. Just on the comment regarding the potential need to react to the TREG changes, and I'm not sure if that you're speaking from just the tariff working group's perspective or else perhaps all other priorities. In other words, I can imagine some of the matters that were raised in the TREG, and the TREG consultation, as you appreciate, covered congestion-free, non-wire solutions, losses. It ran soup to nuts in terms of the reg. Should a number of those items change, I think you're going to require a significant need for consultation with stakeholders to implement them. And so I guess the question is, do we see all ISO priorities or a number of ISO priorities being prepared to be deferred or adapt to, I would imagine, the TREG's, first priority for you guys to work towards? In other words, it's not just tariff modernization that may have to move, but I imagine it's a number of other initiatives across the ISO. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a great question, Evan, and I will speak for my colleagues, and if any of them need to jump in and add to what I have to say, I think you're right. I think, you know, we have prepared our business plan and budget for next year based on what we know today. And if we get
as always, you know, whether it was happening at the end of the year as we're preparing business plans and budgets, or if it happened in February or June, you know, it doesn't really matter. If you get changes to the legislative and regulatory framework, you have to stop and reassess, and clearly those need to become priorities in terms of implementation. And so, you know, we're not going to presuppose what those changes might be, the scope that they might have, or the, you know, how big or how small. Are they bigger than a bread box, or are they fairly minor? You know, I think all of those things are yet to be seen. But our mechanisms for implementing those things, 99% of the time, I suspect, come through either changes to ISO rules or changes to the tariff, or sometimes, you know, changes to internal ISO business practices, which, you know, tend to be a little simpler and more straightforward. But if they require changes to ISO rules or the ISO tariff or any other form of ISO authoritative document, clearly there will need to be engagement with all of industry on how to move that forward, and how to do that right, and how to do it in a way that, sort of is gets to where we need to be sort of in a minimally disruptive way. And so yes, I think there is a risk, clearly, that we see that if there is legislative or regulatory change coming in the next few months, that some of these priorities may shift.
Just if I can follow up then, Miranda, is there a prospect, or could you contemplate perhaps once the TREG kind of hits the streets, to perhaps reconvene this group to chat with industry as to how you think implementation of the TREG changes may roll out in 2022, and also what will need to be deferred to make way for that? Would you contemplate such a discussion?
So again, I'm stepping out and speaking a little bit for my colleagues, and if either Nicole or Mike wanted to jump in on this, I think whether it's this group or not, I don't know.
Miranda, I'll jump in on that. Evan, if there are material changes that come down, and Miranda's framed it, you know, exactly right, we will need to assess what those impacts are to the ISO's workload and priorities. Our first set of conversations will likely be with the ISO board to determine internally where we think those shifts need to be. And depending on the magnitude of changes and the impact to the organization, we will then determine whether or not it's necessary to bring, you know, this kind of group together again based on budget impacts and priority shifts. So we'll have to see what that breadbox, as Miranda frames it, actually looks like. And when we do that, we will be open and transparent about what it means to us and obviously what it means to you as the industry.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Right. Miranda, I think that looks like your question, so we'll bring back Dennis. Thanks, Miranda.
Thanks, everybody, again, for feedback on distribution. I think we're fairly aligned on the feedback. As it relates to optimizing the grid, I just want to be clear that, and maybe I've mentioned this several times, but it remains a core focus for us around how to utilize the existing network as much as we can, and defer the timing of any new infrastructure that we need on the system. So that continues and will continue to be a key focus for us from an initiative perspective. As it relates to distribution, we have invested a fair bit of time over the last year and a half in this space, both from a distributed resource perspective in the technical interconnection requirements. And so we've defined the key ones that we feel as an ISO are best going forward for distributed energy resources. We're implementing those through existing DFO processes. We feel that is the most effective way to do that. All the DFOs have connection guidelines and requirements on their distribution system. And so that's where we're starting with the implementation of those frequency and voltage and other technical requirements. If we find that that turns out to be not effective enough, then only then would we consider whether we need ISO rules in order to implement those technical requirements down on the distribution system. I expect we won't need to do that, but we'll see how it unfolds. As it relates to the connection process, we have been in initial conversations with the DFOs and TFOs on those DFO-related projects in the connection process to see if there's ways we can streamline and improve them going through the connection process. They tend to be obviously slightly different types of projects than the majority of other projects that go through the connection process. We'll use what we learn there in our 2022 engagement, where we will be engaging industry more broadly on the connection process and seeking where we can reduce requirements and streamline that process for the various players that come through the connection process. I've challenged Rob Davidson, who's the director there, to see if there's things we can eliminate, stages we can eliminate. I'm up for being creative in that space. And so obviously we'll look for feedback from industry and see what we can accomplish in that space in 2022. I think that's, and the last one there, last bullet is we are planning for 2022 to focus on probabilistic planning. What that means for us at the transmission and distribution interface. Everybody tends to have a different definition of what probabilistic planning is. So I want to actually work through and get aligned on scope and definition of probabilistic planning in 2022 and determine where we can see benefits of applying different probabilistic approaches on the TX transmission and distribution interface. And potentially in the distribution space as well. So that's work for 2022 that we'll engage in. We have been working on coordinating hosting capability mapping that the DFOs do at the feeder level with our transmission capability mapping so that we're coordinated on that information, and that's part of the capability mapping that we're working on right now as well. So I think that covers the focus for distribution in 2022. Obviously, we'll continue to work the DER roadmap and any remaining technical matters that are more detailed in nature. And you'll see that's all on our website under grid-related initiatives if you want to go there to get more details on that. Any questions on distribution coordination or any feedback that I may have not addressed? Okay. Seeing and hearing none, we'll go to the next slide. Technology integration. Thanks for all your feedback there. It has been helpful. I've tried to articulate what we're trying to accomplish in this space. We will be launching here in Q4. Our first technology forward document. It is a document that is intended to share the ISO's perspective as to various technologies across the electricity value chain. That's what we're focused on. The pace of them moving, where they are in their technology maturity cycle, the potential implications to Alberta and our mandate as those technologies move here into Alberta, and really the intent is to get a discussion going with industry to see what you're seeing, see if we're on the same page, see if we're missing on pace, or see if we're missing on technologies completely, so that together we're generally aligned on those technologies and ensuring that we're proactively prepared as those technologies move to what I would describe as the integration phase, where they're actually commercializing and coming into Alberta and wanting to connect into our system and participate in our market. And so that's the purpose of that technology for it. And it'll be our first shot at it. And we look for your feedback in that when we publish that. We'll publish it in front of our technology summit. So we're doing a technology summit. December 1st is when it will be scheduled. It is to seek industry's input on that technology forward document and also have some external parties share the perspectives on certain technologies across the value chain. And hopefully that'll be a good conversation and a valuable engagement for industry and ourselves. In 2022, you know, based on the feedback we get, both from our document and the summit, it'll help us identify what we would describe as deeper dives into those various top priority technologies, so we can get a much deeper feel for implications across the market and tariff and regulatory and technical integration into the system. I think that's pretty much all I wanted to focus on there. Obviously, the energy storage roadmap and the DER roadmaps will continue to progress those as integration roadmaps because they're already here. And then any changes that come from the DOE's energy storage stakeholder engagement and any policy or reg or ledge that they bring forward in that space will obviously influence our roadmap, and we'll adjust accordingly in 2022 on the roadmap. So any questions or feedback that I missed in this particular space? For me, this is all about proactively being aware and deliberately driving integration plans when the time is right to be doing that. Okay, no questions, then I'll turn it next slide. I guess that's me again. So on grid resiliency, thanks for all the feedback. It was very helpful. I do want to emphasize this is part of our core business. We've just elevated it as a focus in 2022, given the growing importance of focusing on resilience across our system. You can see on the right-hand side how we plan to proceed. I put this in order of priority because this is the priority I believe we need to tackle. Frequency response capability is obviously one. We are having an industry update session on frequency response capability here in the next 2 weeks. I can't remember the date. Carla probably remembers. It might be October 7th or something like that. It's in our stakeholder newsletter. And we have action plans we need to progress in that space into 2022. The other area is extreme event preparedness. I have launched an cross-industry senior engagement on this from a gas and electric independency perspective. We recognize as coal moves to gas, we become much more reliant on gas production from an electricity perspective. And I want to learn from ERCOT's experience and be clear on our interdependencies, gas to electric, electric to gas, ensure that we government, gas, transportation, supply, electricity are coordinated on prioritization under emergency events. The other focus in that we've created a couple of working groups is to look at communication to make sure that the various parties are coordinated and clear on communication when we're in that type of an event and any of the protocols to escalate once we start seeing an event, an extreme event coming. So that's the second priority for me. That's already work underway. The third priority, and there's lots of feedback on this, obviously we understand the need to assess our reliability requirements as the grid transforms through decarbonization. We are looking at the LTO and the various scenarios there, including the clean tech one, to make sure we can understand the implications from a reliability need perspective, and that crosses inertia, frequency response capability, dynamic, ramping, net demand variability, all of those. And really the goal in 2022 is to get really crisp on the technical requirements we see as we look out into the future that we will need in order to keep the grid resilient through that transformation. And then with those clear needs identified, we can go to the next stage of assessing any market-based approaches to deliver on those future requirements. And as Miranda has said many times, and we have, we are motivated to find ways to obtain these requirements competitively in our market. And so that'll be a 2023 and beyond type focus. I don't think I'll go through the other ones. If there's any questions or feedback that I may have missed, I'm open now for questions.
All right. And Dennis, further to your comment, it is October 7th is the session, and registration is available on our website.
Thanks, Carla.
I have a question. I have a question from Victoria, but we'll let maybe Rob go ahead first.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. For Dennis, will the December Technology Summit include the rest of the Alberta CAN innovation ecosystem? Alberta Innovates, ERA, ST, DC, et cetera. Can you tell us more about this?
They'll obviously be invited to participate. We are not having them as co-leads in the discussion at this stage. That might be an improvement opportunity for next year, Victoria. So we'll see how that unfolds here in this particular summit.
Perfect. Thanks, Karen. Rob, please go ahead.
Hi, Dennis. Just wanted to see, maybe this is too early of a question. It goes back to the technology integration. Just kind of wanting to understand, and probably others too, of how the technology integration will kind of span across the ISO, like including, you know, proper tariffs to be in place in advance of these technologies. I know that you talked about the summit that you'll be having. Is that kind of going to happen there, or is it something that already the ISO is starting to look at on how to coordinate across the organization and with stakeholders as well?
Good question. Whoever's sharing the screen, we've gone to some other location on your computer. Thanks. So the way we are doing that, Rob, is as we get to a point where a technology is reaching that integration phase within Alberta, therefore becoming more relevant for us, that's the point where we would develop an integration roadmap, similar to the energy storage roadmap or the DER roadmap. And if you're familiar with those roadmaps, we are quite deliberate in those roadmaps to look at all the cross-functional implications of integration, from technical power system to market, to tariff, to regulatory policy, regulatory regulations, those types of things. And it's through that roadmap that we ensure we're both cross-functionally coordinated, and through that roadmap that we engage with industry on those cross-functional implications across that mandate. So that would be the method and approach we will continue to take from an integration perspective when the next new technology hits the radar that we need to actually move to integration phase.
Okay, thank you very much, Dennis.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions? If not, I'll turn it back to who's next.
To Karen. Thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, Dennis. So now we'll get into the 2022 preliminary forecast and budget information. But just before we switch to that, I wanted to reiterate that what we provided in the slides today are not the full responses to the comments. We do have posted on the ISO website the ISO replies to the stakeholder comments. So those were posted when this presentation was posted. So if you're looking for anything specific in there that you felt wasn't addressed, you can take a look at the replies as well. Okay. So this is just a summary of the transmission operating costs, and this has the 2022 forecast. So we've got a 2022 forecast for the transmission operating costs, which includes the wires costs, the ancillary service costs, and the transmission line loss costs of $2.2501 billion, and the 2021 projection of $2.2266 billion. We can go to the next slide, please. Thanks. And then we've got the wires cost summary, the details with that. So the forecast cost total is $1.8967 billion. And then we've got the projected, which is $1.6746 billion, which is comes in quite a bit lower than the forecast that we had last year due to the AML refund that we had. Of, I think it was approximately $223 million. So this is a flow through. I don't know if there's any questions on those.
Doesn't look like it, Karen.
Okay. We'll go to the next slides. Now we'll get into the, I'll pass it over to Sohila for the pool price forecast.
Sure, thanks very much, Karen, and hi, everyone. So today I'll be providing an overview of the 2022 BRP forecast, including the forecast pool price, the load outlook, the cost of ancillary services, as well as the cost of transmission line losses. So for the BRP, forecast pool price is the key input into our calculations for the forecasted cost of ancillary services. Specifically the cost of operating reserve as well as cost of transmission line losses. And we've used the EDC quarterly forecast update for pool price, specifically the third quarter 2021 update that was released in mid-August. And we have used the hourly forecast pool price from August to December 2021, as well as the full year for 2022. Next slide, please, which will be slide 35. So EDC forecast update includes some of the recent market fundamentals, such as the impacts of carbon pricing, pricing impacts associated with conversions of coal assets, outages of generation units, natural gas prices, as well as renewable additions. EDC produces 50 annual hourly seats and averages those seats to create a single aggregate annual price. And we're using a single seat from a sample of 50 seats, and we use the hourly seat that is closest to the EDC summary or aggregate annual price, and we're using that as an as our representative price forecast. So the reason we're using a single seat versus an average of all the seats is basically to preserve the variabilities for the pool price and also capture hourly market volatility. So that single seat basically produced a price duration curve, which is more representative of actual price duration curves compared to average of all the seats. Moving on to the next slide. Thank you. So we start with the 2021 forecast. As you can see, the 2021 projected average pool price is higher than the 2021 BRP forecast. And that's due to a number of drivers, and those drivers include higher than expected demand that was driven by extreme weather, combined with modest wind generation that we had this year, and strong pricing in interconnected markets, generation outages, higher than forecast natural gas prices, as well as the return of the PPA assets to the owners, from the balancing pool at the end of 2020. So the other thing that I want to mention here is that the forecast is reasonably aligned with the forward market on an average basis as of end of July 2021. And as we move to 2022 forecast, we see a decline in pool prices compared to 2021 projected value. So forward prices are also decreasing into the future as natural gas, solar, and green generation developments are expected to increase the supply. So the lower pool price that is anticipated for 2022 can be mainly attributed to increased renewable generation that are entering commercial operation through 2022, as well as an assumption of normal weather. So those could be the two reasons where the 2022 price forecasts are trending lower. And when we compare EDC pool price forecasts with forward market prices, you can see that they are reasonably close for both 2021 projected and 2022 forecast values. And this is as of end of July 2021. And moving on to the next slide, which will be slide 37. So here on this slide, we have shown the pool price duration curves for 2020 actuals, 2021 VRP, 2021 projected, and 2022 forecast. So as you can see, the 2021 projection has significantly more hours with high pool prices compared to the 2021 VRP forecast. And 2021 VRP forecast already had more than what we observed in 2020. And then when we look at the 2022 forecast, we have less high priced hours than the 2021 projection. And that's due to more renewable generation that are expected to come online. And then also an expectation of normal weather that was assumed in the pool price forecast for 2022. So this is basically the last slide for the pool prices. I wanted to pause to see if there are any questions before we move on to load outlooks.
It looks like there's a question coming. Oh, here it is. Mm-hmm. Will the EDC, this is from Sante, Capital mm-hmm. Power, will the EDC pool price forecast be used for other ISO analysis to be published related to market sustainability?
I think they're using the EDC price forecast for other reporting as well, but I'm not sure if we are publishing any pool price forecast in terms of the hourly level or anything like that, because it's based on the subscription that we have with EDC. I'm not sure, Kevin, if you have anything on that to answer.
Yeah, thanks, Ohayla. I'll just quickly jump in there. We certainly look at EDC and you know, other third-party forecasts that we can get a hold of. As one of the things we consider when we're doing our analysis in terms of our market sustainability assessments, you know, we do using our models that we use for creating the long-term outlook. We do form a view of what supply is expected to come into the market. And so that would continue to be our primary means for, developing our market sustainability assessments. So we don't have any plans to replace that or use EDC for that at the moment.
Thank you. We've got a question from Chris McLeave and Max.
Mm-hmm. Chris, you just have to unmute.
Sure. Hi, everybody. I've got a question around TransAlta's announcement yesterday. They announced the retirement of, I think it was Keep Hills 1 by the end of this year. And I think it was, if I remember correctly, Sundance 4 by April 1st of 22. I would assume that those retirements should change pool price forecasts and ancillary service costs. Has or will the ISO rerun their budgets and forecasts based on that new information?
That's a great point. And also, I want to confirm that we have noticed that the forward market prices are up by about $16 per megawatt hour on average for calendar year 2022 as of today, and as we compare with what we have assumed in our ERP forecast. And then we understand that the forward curve continues to increase, and that's mainly driven by increasing gas prices, the strong forward pricing in interconnected market, as well as the announced retirement yesterday of some thermal units, as you mentioned. So we understand that the forward prices continue to evolve or increase as we get closer to 2022. And we also understand that that's a key input for calculations of cost for operating reserve as well as the transmission line losses. And that's why I think we're not, at this point, we're not planning to update any of the cost forecast. And then we have the deferral account process and adjustments for that to deal with any changes in cost that we may see in future as a result of changes in the pool prices. I'm not sure if there's anything else that Kevin, you want to add to that.
Just that, you know, we are, as Sohaila referenced, we're monitoring that. I think there's the practicality of we've got to cut it off at some point just in order to do the analysis and get the budget locked in. And so at this point, we're not considering a change, but again, you know, we'd love to hear your feedback on that. And we all know, you know, forward prices bounce around. So we don't base our budget off of the forward curve. We base it off of the forecast with the expectation that that's, you know, going to incorporate a bit more of the fundamental analysis, but also give us that information around expectations of what hourly volatility and things like that might be. So it's a benchmark that we look at, but we do prefer to use the forecast that we get from EDC as something that's grounded in some third-party analysis.
I was just going to add, too, that we recover the operating reserves and the losses based on the actual cost, not on forecast costs. So the forecast gives us an indication, but the actual recovery is based on the actual pool price and operating reserves costs.
Okay, I think that's helpful to hear from everybody. Thank you. Just when I saw the announcement yesterday, and you think about 700 to 800 megawatts in that range, it's just wanted to ask that question. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there any other questions? If not, we can move on to the next section on load outlook. Okay, so here we will start with the load measurement definitions. We are showing in this slide the waterfall chart for 2022 energy forecast. And on the left side, we have Alberta Internal Load, or AIL. So AIL, as you can see on the slide, is system load plus load served by on-site generating units, or what we call behind-the-fence load. And that basically includes those within an industrial system designation as well as the City of Medicine Hat. So AIL is an input into the operating reserves volumes forecast, specifically that impacts the amount of contingency reserves that are procured during high import hours. And then next we have the net to grid load, which is equivalent to AIL less self-supply load, or sites with an industrial system designation. So net to grid load is the one of the primary inputs in the operating reserves volume forecast, and specifically impacts the base amount of contingency reserves procured based on the Alberta Reliability Standard. Then we have the system load, which is equivalent to net to grid load less load served by distributed generation greater than 5 megawatt, as well as duplication avoidance tariff, or DAT volumes. So the key difference, as you can see, between the net to grid load and system load is the load served by greater than 5 megawatt DGs. And system load volumes are a key input for establishing the annual megawatt hour for the energy market trading charges. And another way to describe the system load is basically, as you see on the slide, is the total of all metered load under rate DTS, FTS, and DOS, plus transmission line losses. And losses are included in the system load measure. And then on the chart you see on the right side, we have the 2022 energy forecast for DTS, FTS, and DOS as well. Next slide, please. Slide 40. So 2022 BRP load outlooks considers different drivers. The Conference Board of Canada, or CBOC, August 2021 provincial outlook for economic drivers considers oil sands production from forecasts from the July 2021 IHS outlook. also considers the P50 weather, the impacts of the pandemic on load, as well as calendar effects. And we also added a trend variable to both system load and net bill load outlooks to capture the growth in distributed generation and load served by DGs. So this variable is basically based on historical growth in distributed generation. That includes microgeneration as well. And we added this variable to capture the amount of load that is not served by the transmission system. So as you can see here, AIL is projected an increase by 3.8% from 2020 to 2021, and then forecasted increase of 2.1% from 2021 to 2022. Moving on to the next slide, slide 41. Here you see more information on AIL load outlook. Looking at actual values on the right side, we have seen load reductions over the past 2 years, specifically in 2020. And that was mainly due to the effect of the pandemic combined with low oil prices, as well as just the overall downturn in the economy and the impacts on loads. And then when we look at the 2021 projected AIL versus our BRP forecasts from last year, we see a 3% increase. And that's mainly due to different factors such as the effects of extreme weather events during that was driving higher load in 2021. And other reasons include a stronger recovery in demand from COVID-19 impacts, rising oil prices, expected growth in Alberta's economy, as well as oil sands production outlook. And as we move to the 2022 AIL forecast, we see an increase of 2.1% compared to the 2021 projected AIL. And that is driven by an ongoing expected recovery from the pandemic and an forecasted economic and population growth, as well as forecasted growth in oil sands production. Moving on to the next slide. This slide, thank you. We have shown the average monthly AIL for 2019 and 2020 actuals, the year 2021, and the 2022 forecast. And then here, looking at 2020 actuals, from April and towards the third quarter of the year, you can see that's where we're seeing the impacts of the pandemic and low oil prices on load. And then as we look towards the end of the 2020 year, following economic relaunch and increasing oil prices, we see some recovery in load. And then moving to the 2021 actuals, you can see that we are coming up back closer to 2019 levels. And you can also see the impacts of extreme weather on demand in 2021, specifically in February and also during the summer months of June and July of this year. And then talking about the forecast, looking at the 2021 forecast, that we can see that the projected increases, we have some projected increase, and that's due to the ongoing recovery in demand from the pandemic, higher oil sands production, as well as expected growth in economy. And then same for 2022, we see forecasted load growth above the 2021 projection, which is driven by just a continued gain from economic recovery and forecasted oil sands production growth. And then I have two more slides on load. So on the next slide, thanks. So this is basically a table that captures the 2022 forecast, 21 projected, as well as the three historical years to give you a perspective on how our load forecast compares with historics, so for all different load measures. And then here, looking at 2020 actuals, you can see the effects of the downturn on load on all the different load measures, including AIL, net to bill load, system load, and BTS load. And we are expecting a growth in all these load measures for both 2021 projected and 2022 forecasts. So as you can see, net to grid load is another point is that net to grid load is growing at a higher rate as compared to the system load or DTS load. And as I mentioned before, that difference in growth is due to the expected growth in greater than 5 megawatt distributed generation, when we are expecting some growth in load that is served by DGs, which has an offsetting effect on system load and DTS load. So I have one more slide, and then we can take questions after that. So here, We are showing the average monthly load for all the load measures for 2020 actuals, 2021 both forecast and historics, and then we have the 2022 forecast. So our forecast, as you see here, starts from August 2021, and then we are seeing a reasonably similar shape and trends across all different load measures. And something that I want to highlight here is that we have implemented improvements in our processes and load forecast models to increase the efficiency and make more consistency within all different load outlooks. This is basically the last slide for the load outlook, and then I'll be happy to take any questions that you may have. And yeah.
Like, we've got a question from Richard Penn.
Mm-hmm. So, Richard, I've allowed you your mic. You just have to unmute yourself. So, Richard, we are cannot hear you.
You're welcome to email me the question if you're not able to type one in the chat.
And Richard, again, if you want to, it may be that just to leave the meeting and then just re-enter and we'll admit you promptly. That may fix the mic issue. Our apologies. All right, you may have to just go on to the next section.
Yeah, and then
when Richard's question comes in, or if he does decide to leave and come back, we'll get him at that point. Oh, there we go. So he's come back. Richard, do you want to try one more time? All right, Richard, we've allowed your mic again. Nope. Sorry about that, Richard. All right, Suhili, we'll just, we can continue on, and then we'll try and get Richard's questions through an email or into our chat to sure we answer that
one. Sounds good. So moving on to the next section on ancillary services cost. Next slide 46. So for operating reserves, we forecast both active and standby OR costs, including standby activations. And this includes all the different types of reserve that we have, regulating, spinning, and supplemental. And then we take the, to calculate the cost, we take the forecasted volumes in each hour, multiply it by the forecasted OR prices, and then we sum them to an annual level to get to calculate the total cost. And then for the active continuous reserve volume, it's forecasted based on Alberta reliability standard requirements, and also we're using a forecast of net to grid load, net to grid generation, AIL load outlook, and also some assumptions around the import level to basically forecast the volumes for active continuous reserve. And in terms of standby continuous reserve and all different types of regulating reserve volumes, active or standby, they are basically forecasted based on the formulas that outline the reserve requirements and volumes for every hour. And then in terms of OR prices, it's based on the relationship between pool price levels and also OR premiums and discounts of previous 2 years. And then we're using the last 2 years for OR prices to basically capture some of the recent market fundamentals, especially with PPA returning back to the owners, and also some of the OR market changes with respect to the standby volume and activations we have decided to use the all our premiums and discounts of the previous 2 years. Then on to the next slide, please. Here we have the forecasted ancillary services cost. So at first we have the operating reserve cost. And for OR cost, looking at the 2020 actuals, you can see that 2020 OR cost is lower than the 2019. And that's in part because of the lower food prices that we had in 2020. And there's other factors such as we have seen some reductions in active regulating reserve procurements in 2020, as well as an update to the LSSI Army table. And that also altogether resulted in lower OR costs for 2020. And then looking at the 2021 forecast, we are seeing that the projected OR cost is higher than the 2021 VRP. And this is mainly because of a significant increase in food prices that we had in 2021. And that was because of the, as I mentioned, higher than expected demand that was driven by extreme weather. And then there was other factors as well, as mentioned before, such as the strong pricing in interconnected markets, higher than forecast natural gas prices, the return of PPA assets to the owners at the end of 2020. So they all impacted the higher prices that we had in 2021. And in addition to that, in terms of the projection for the rest of the year, we have higher projected pool price for the remainder of the year. And that's basically another factor for having a higher 2021 projected OR cost as compared to the last year's VRP forecast. And other factors, again, are we had the high import volumes in 2021, and also load was high as well in 2021. So all this together basically resulted in having a higher OR cost in 2021 as compared to the previous VRP's forecast. And then for the OR, when we are looking at the 2022 forecast, you see that it's mainly it's lower, and then that's mainly because of the lower forecasted pool price that we have for 2022. And that this cost variance also is partly attributed to reduction in standby reserve requirements with lower standby procured volumes, as well as lower standby activations that we have in our forecast for 2022. Then next we have the LSSI or load shed service for imports, and then looking at 2020 actuals, we see an increase compared to 2019, and different reasons for that. We had an updated LSSI arming table in mid-2020, and that resulted in more LSSI requirements for high import hours. And we also had high imports in high import year in 2020, and also we issued a trip payment during the months of June 2020. And those are some of the reasons why LSSI cost was higher in 2020 compared to 2019. And then looking at the 2021 projected cost for LSSI, it's lower than the 2021 VRP, and that's because of lower than expected availability volumes of LSSI. So arming payments were also slightly lower than last year's VRP, but these were basically offset by the two payments that we had for the two trip events that were not initially included in our original forecast in the last year's VRP. And then looking at the 2022, LSSI costs are slightly lower than 2021 projected. And something to note here is that 2022 LSSI forecast considers historical availability levels and forecasts of import, as well as assumptions around arming volumes. We also have other ancillary services costs in this table. Next one is the contracted TMR. You can see there is no cost for that in our forecast. And this is because ASO doesn't currently have any contracts in place for transmission master on. And then for conscripted services, ORTMR, we anticipate $5 million for 2021 project and 2022 forecast. In terms of reliability services, they are provided through an agreement with PowerX. And then you can see that the costs are consistent across the years. And same for Black Start. So we have relatively consistent costs across all these years. And then we have the TCR. We forecast $2 million for 2021 projected and $1 million for 2022 forecast. And then there's no cost for Poplar Hill because the contract was canceled in 2019. And then when we look at the total ancillary services cost, we have high cost for 2021 projected. And that's mainly driven by operating reserve costs. So that's a big portion of the total AS cost. So this is the last slide that I have for the forecasted cost of ancillary services. I'll pause here to see if there are any questions before we move on to the last section for my part, which is the line losses forecast.
Doesn't look like any questions have floated up, Sahila, so we'll move on.
Okay, so next is, so moving on to forecast of transmission line losses. So the annual forecast of cost for transmission line losses is the sum of hourly forecast losses volume that is multiplied by the hourly forecast pool price that is provided by EBC. And the losses volume forecast is based on a statistical model that captures the relationship between load drivers and losses. Also considers economic drivers, P50 weather, and also calendar effects. And on to the next slide, slide 15. So looking at losses volumes over the past few years, so historically we have seen losses are declined, but they have slightly increased in 2020, as you can see here. And then so a big drop that we had from 2017 to 2018. So we saw a 16% reduction in line losses from 2017 to 2018. And then 2018, 2019 were at the same level, and then we saw a slight increase in 2020. And then in terms of the forecast, transmission line losses volumes in 2021 are projected to be slightly higher than last year's BRP, and then there's a slight increase in volume of losses can be partly attributed to the fact that generation in high loss factor regions has run at a higher capacity factors. And then looking at the losses volume in 2022, they're expected to be at the similar level to the 2021 projected volume. And they're also in line with the line losses that we have seen over the past couple of years since 2018. And then looking at the costs of the transmission line losses, they are highly correlated with the pool price, as you can see. And they're changing the same proportion with pool price. And for example, from 2021 projected to 2022, we see that the cost of transmission line losses are declining, and they're declining in the same proportion as the pool prices. So this is basically the last slide that I have, and I'll pause to see if there's any questions on any of these topics that I talked about.
I have a question from Richard. If we can go back to slide 43, please. Well, the ISO focuses on load growth on AIL. On slide 43, you can see DTS load for 2022 has not come back to the same level as 2018, down over 1 terawatt hour. Can you explain why DTS is not growing?
As you can see here, AIL forecast for 2021 projected. We have the forecast to be higher than the 2018 actuals, but when we look at the other load measures for 2021 projected, they are below the 2018 values. And also when we look at 2022, you can see among all these load measures, net-to-gain load is forecasted to be higher than the 2018 value, but the other two load measures mentioned, DTS and system load, are still sitting below the 2018 levels. That's basically one of the things that we implemented this year is we added additional variables for the DTS load forecast in the DTS load forecast model to basically capture the offsetting impacts from the growth in the amount of load that is served by distributed generation. And so that's also something that we considered for the DTS load and system load outlooks. And as I mentioned in the presentation, With that, we basically wanted to capture some of the growth in the amount of load that is served by DGs. And then as you can see, comparing, for example, DTS load with network grid load, you can see this network grid load is increasing at a higher rate. And then, as I mentioned, that's mainly because of the expectations that we have from the DER growth. And then in terms of the DER growth, basically we use the historical months over months growth that we observe in the installed capacity for all different small or large distributed generation, distributed connected generations, as well as micro generations. So this is also, as another fact, is being supported by the amount of DER projects, specifically DER solar, that we are expecting to come online according to the ASO's connection project list. So we're expecting to see some growth in DER, and that's basically what that is offsetting the DTS growth here for 2021 and 2022. I'm not sure if that answered your question, Richard.
All right. And any further questions from Richard, Karen?
Any further? I think that I don't know if you wanted to elaborate at all, Kevin, on that, or I think that that covered the reason why DTS hasn't been growing relative to the AIL there. So.
I think Sohaila covered it very well. Yeah. It's really a distributed generation story.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's it. All I have so far. Thank you.
Perfect. All right. It doesn't look like anyone else has their hands up. So I'll move forward to there. So I think now we're moving on to the general and administrative budget.
Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Sohaila. And this is Pam.
All right. Thank you, Carla. Good morning, everyone. I'll be walking you through our next section of slides here on our 2022 preliminary G&A budget. So here you can see our ISO own cost summary. We've got our 2022 budget here of $123.1 million overall, and the breakdown showing there between our G&A, interest and amortization, the three main components of that. We are projecting slightly higher than the 2021 BRP, and we'll get into some of the specifics of that in future slides. You can see our G&A is up approximately $4 million. Interest, relatively consistent with prior years. You'll notice that 2021 projected and 2020 actual look significantly higher. That's simply due to presentation of our loss factor resettlements. There was some interest expense on there, but that interest expense is largely offset by revenues, which are not presented here. And amortization, pretty consistent overall, and that does fluctuate year to year just based on our capital portfolio and the timing of projects, commissioning of assets, and the estimated useful life of those assets. Next slide, please. So our G&A budget process, it's very similar to past years. We prepare our own cost budget based on our planned business initiatives. Those have been discussed in detail throughout the course of this morning, as well as in our August 26th stakeholder meeting. The assessments for our budget are based on various criteria, looking both at our internal and external costs. Those considerations include our resource requirements to deliver on our key business initiatives, consideration of specialized knowledge and skills that are required and how we obtain those in the most cost-effective manner. We look at our resource constraints due to workflow and the timing of initiatives on our plate, as well as mitigating any risk throughout that. So on a holistic basis, we assess our resource requirements and compile our budget based on that. Next slide, please. So our budget considerations for 2022, Above all, ensuring the reliability of our Alberta interconnected electric system, that's critical to us. Secondly, a focus on our delivery of key initiatives. So that's those external initiatives that should be fairly familiar to you all by this point, as well as our internal initiatives. So on top of those external initiatives, we're always focused on strengthening our core business areas internally. That includes markets and competition, grid resiliency, data and digitalization, and external engagement. So on the whole, we're looking at successful delivery of our key corporate initiatives while maintaining our high standards of reliability. Next slide. So as noted in my first slide there, our 2022 budget is $4 million higher or 4% higher than our 2021 budgeted costs. And this is due to a number of factors. The first two you'll see here is an increase in our facility operating costs. Many of those costs are out of our control, just based on market costs to run that facility. Similarly, we have a notable increase in our insurance costs, and that's due to increasing pressure in the market, which once again is out of our control. Staff resources, we do have an increase there this year. That's just based on our assessment of what's required to advance our strategic initiatives, particularly in the area of grid optimization around congestion analysis, where the long-term cost benefit to Albertans of pushing out transmission costs could generate significant cost savings. Additional pressure was also created through sustained and growing connection volumes. So in light of these increases, some of which are beyond our control, we have made a concerted effort to offset by finding decreases in other areas. So you will note decreases in our consulting, legal and audit costs for 2022, as well as computer services, maintenance, and telecom. With regards to our 2021 budget and our forecasted G&A costs, we are currently forecasting higher than budget for 2021. And that's due largely to lower vacancy rates than historical. And that is largely out of our control as well. So once again, we've had to make concerted efforts to offset some of those increases. We've done that wherever we can to minimize or defer spend. We've had some help there based on the pandemic, helping us reduce some of our admin costs due to our remote work environment, and then just working on the timing and completion of some other initiatives to, as I've said, defer or minimize some of those costs. Our trading charge for 2022 is lower than 2021. This reflects a refund of a projected overcollection in 2021, as well as reduced allocations of budgeted 2022 costs to the energy market. And we've got some slides upcoming here where I'll go into that in a bit more detail. Next slide, please. So here you'll see our G&A costs. So we've got our 2022 budget of $95.7 million. It's up $4 million from our 2021 BRP and slightly up from our projection for 2021. This slide shows the breakdown by the key components that we report on. So as previously noted, you'll see our increase in staff costs there just based on what we require to meet our strategic deliverables and those business initiatives. You'll also notice a slight increase in administrative and facilities as discussed. That's our facilities cost and our insurance cost projected for 2022. And then the decreases as noted also for contract services and consultants, computer services and maintenance, and telecommunications. Next slide, please. So this slide is similar, just a different way of looking at that, but this basically shows our 2021 approved G&A budget of 91.7 and how we get to our 2022 preliminary budget of 95.7 million. We've got that 4.5 increase in staff costs, 0.4 increase in insurance, 0.5 million in facilities operating costs, and then our concerted efforts to just decrease costs in other areas, consulting, legal, and audit, we've decreased that budget by almost $1,900,000, and a $500,000 reduction in computer services, maintenance, and telecom due to savings that could be found in that area. Next slide, please. So this slide breaks down our consulting and legal costs as well as our capital costs by business initiative. Consulting and legal, you can see there's a variety of costs for different business initiatives there, tariff modernization and grid resiliency being a couple of the bigger ones. And on the capital cost side, the bulk of that relating to business initiatives is in that grid resiliency area, which Karen will cover off in some future slides. Next slide, please. Other industry costs. So we've got $24.1 million in our 2022 budget for other industry. This is slightly up from our 2021 BRP and our projection for the end of this year. The largest component of our other industry costs is our AUC administration fees. Those are very consistent with our 2021 BRP. And you can see the breakdown there between transmission and energy market. Regulatory process costs, we've got an increase there from the previous year. And that budget is simply based on our anticipated costs for regulatory proceedings in 2022. And then our WEC, Northwest Power Pool, and North American Reliability Corporation costs, again, those are out of our control. Those are costs that we pay to be part of those organizations, and those are coming in at 2.5 for next year. So that's the breakdown of our total other industry costs. And I see we do have a question.
Yeah, if we can unmute Chanel, please.
Chanel, you've been unmuted. You'll just have to unmute yourself.
Perfect. Thanks. I think I got it. Thanks for the presentation, Pam. It's Chanel Sinclair from Heartland Generation. Just wanted to go back to slide 56. About the increase in staff costs from other initiatives. Can you provide any more color on that? Like, you know, which specific initiatives or a further breakdown? I think it would be helpful to just understand where those resources are being devoted.
Thank you, Chanel. If we could advance perhaps to the next slide where we kind of comment on that a bit. And the So you'll see there we note a little bit on what those initiatives are, and it's particularly in the grid optimization, and it's around our congestion analysis and our grid resilience, as well as Pam mentioned earlier, we just said increase in the connection. So a bit of that management there to try to handle the increased capacity. You'll see, just as Pam had noted, part of the forecast issue we had was certainly our vacancy rate. So you could see just by the fact that our vacancy rate, we usually have some capacity to be able to manage that, you know, defer some hirings as they come available. We were just very resource constrained for the year and didn't have that flexibility or the vacancy rate. So everybody was kind of full bore. So to take on some of these new strategic initiatives, we do see some additional work being needed there. As mentioned also in the initial slides, we do feel the benefits that come out of that work is huge as opposed to the cost. And certainly, I think, Dennis, if you need to speak to that, we can certainly add some more color.
There, I have to unmute. Maybe I will add a little color. I don't know if everybody recalls, but I think it was about 2019 is when we consolidated two of the transmission and operations teams into grid reliability. And if you go back to the slide there, 2019 costs, we reduced significantly in 2019-2020 with reduction in staff as we consolidated those two groups, as well as in consulting resources. And so as we did that and have been working through the next 3 years, I've been deliberately identifying where we cut a little too deep in some of the areas. One of those areas was clearly in the connection team. And with the volume of projects that are in our connection process and frankly, the complexity now of having to accommodate that volume of connections, we've had to add some resources in our connection team. And we did that this year. So that's part of it. I think there's about 6 resources that we added there to deal with the level that I cut and then the increased volume that we're dealing with. The other is there's 2 other areas from an initiative perspective. The congestion analysis work that we are now doing is fairly complicated and requires incremental resources to continue to both do the volume of congestion analysis we're doing, but we're increasing the volume of congestion analysis going forward because it's a highly effective tool for us to be able to defer the timing of transmission infrastructure. And the value we save by being confident of deferral way outweighs the small incremental cost of those additional resources. And then one last area is in the grid resilience space. With the changes on the system, we are seeing a variety of challenges technically, inertia, frequency response capability, et cetera. And so I am adding 1 additional resource in our budget to give us the capacity to more effectively technically analyze that transition and make sure we understand the reliability requirements we need going forward to ensure the resilience of the grid going forward. So that's kind of the summary from a grid reliability perspective in this area.
Thank you, Dennis, Nicole. That's very helpful. I certainly understand a lot better, so I appreciate the forthcoming responses.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dennis.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Nicole and Dennis, and thanks, Chanel, for the question.
Looks like we've got a question from Luis Pando. The increase in regulatory process to $3.5 million for 2022 seems high considering reductions to legal and consulting costs as well as AUC regulatory burden and RTR initiatives to reduce regulatory costs. Could you explain what specific regulatory activities will trigger these costs?
Sure, great question. I don't know, Pauline, if you want to step up and speak to that one.
I think that one is probably directed at me. So again, these are all forecast in terms of what we expect to unfold next year. And I would say that this is sort of a combination of proceedings. Some of them will also sort of not be in the administrative realm. So some of the costs, again, that are due to unexpected litigation at the Court of Appeal or otherwise are also included in this set of costs. As well, some of the, I guess, the nature of proceedings that we expect will be in front of the regulator. Again, we have some meaty ones that are forecast to go forward next year, the tariff being a major one. And so that has contributed to an increase in, again, the forecast costs for next year in this area. The other thing I would note is that from an intervener cost perspective, again, we've had sort of an increase in those that we've seen. And so we've tried to, again, put those into what we expect we will have to pay out in terms of intervener costs for some of our bigger proceedings next year. So that's hopefully a bit more of an explanation around why we expect to see a rise in some of those costs next year if the proceedings, again, that we think will unfold do in fact unfold.
Thank you, Pauline.
We just had a general question from Dylan Grove. Where can we get a copy of this recording? And the webinar recording will be available later today on our website in the business planning section.
Okay. So Carla, could take us back to slide 60. Yes, thank you. So our 2022 preliminary energy market trading charge. This slide here shows a breakdown of our 2022 trading charge on the cent per megawatt basis. So you can see at the top our ISO costs have come down a fair bit from prior year. We're at 23 cents per megawatt for our ISO costs, which includes our G&A interest and amortization, as well as a small component of the regulatory or the other industry costs, sorry. We have this slightly offset by an energy market surplus that will be refunded out, and that's just based on a projected surplus to the end of this year, bringing us to a total ISO component of 20.2 cents per megawatt. Added on to that is the AUC's portion of that energy market trading charge, which is our administration fee to them. That's 6.3 cents for a total of 26.5 cents per megawatt. And I'll just note that this does not yet include the market surveillance administrator portion of our trading charge, which will come once we have that information available to us. Next slide, please. Similarly, this again relates to the energy market trading charge, but on a total dollar basis. So we've got our 2022 budget of ISO costs at $28.5 million, which is lower than what we had in 2021. So some savings there for the energy market. $3.5 million of planned surplus refund on top of that, getting us to a total ISO charge of $25 million. The AUC energy market admin fee of $7.9 million added on there for the total of $32.9 million in costs being captured through that trading charge for 2022. And just a note again that the MSA portion is still not included on this total at this time. And I think that concludes my section. I'll pause here if there's any further questions for myself or Nicole.
Doesn't look like it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Pam.
Okay, on to, we're nearing the end of the presentation. We've got the 2022 capital budget. So here's the high-level view of the preliminary capital budget, the summary. So for 2022, we're budgeting $28.2 million, and the 2021 projected is $23.9 million, and this is just a projection at this point. So we'll go on to the next slide. So this is just an explanation of the different budget categories. So we've broken them down into key capital initiatives, other capital initiatives, life cycle funding, and major projects, which we don't have any at this time. Just go on to the next one. Just some general budget information. The budgeted proposed capital costs for 2022 are $2.9 million higher than the budgeted 21. Oh, and sorry, got an error in that slide. Must not have updated. What that's due to, and we'll update that. Sorry, projected capital costs for 2021 are $1.4 million or 6% lower than the budgeted expectations due to the impacts of COVID-19 on timing and completion of work. This is in addition to strategic efforts to minimize or defer spend. And apologies on that slide. It just must not have updated when we were doing the presentation. Okay, preliminary capital budget. So this is just a breakdown in the budget components. So you can see where we've increased in certain categories, and the total general capital, as I said, is $28.2 million, and we've got an increase on the EMS sustainment of $8.9 million, and that relates, I believe, to the grid resiliency components. And we'll just go to the next slide. So preliminary capital budget, other capital initiatives, we just provide a summary of that, but just to give you some information on that, it's related to facilities refurbishment and security-related system enhancement programs that we have, operational effectiveness, system controller effectiveness, business technology solutions, record management, which includes record management, personal productivity tools, forecasting software, governance risk and compliance, GRC tool, and various others. Preliminary capital budget life cycle funding, that's ongoing investment in general infrastructure and application platforms. So I won't go through that list for you, but that's a category that we've had on for a number of years. And then finally on to management controls and contingency. If there's any, if there's not any questions on the capital budget, I'll move on to this.
Doesn't look like anything's coming up, Karen. We'll let you move on.
Okay. So this isn't anything new. It's just how we manage variances. So less than 10% of a budgeted change to the general and administrative expenditures is considered manageable. So we wouldn't need to go change the budget, and then less than 20% on the capital. I'll just go on to the next slide. So just any questions at this point, you can ask us any questions that you didn't get to during the presentation that you'd like to touch on.
Oh,
Evan's got a question there.
Evan, if you want to unmute.
Good. Thank you. Can you hear me, Karen? A little thumbs up or something?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great. Just in review of all of the initiatives proposed in the plan here, and I know that a lot of them were pent up from 2020 as kind of deferred initiatives in light of COVID. I guess my question is more of a comment. I am concerned about the magnitude of what is proposed by the ISO for 2022, even within its own plan, notwithstanding what may be coming at us with the transmission regulation change in particular, and how that may roll into ISO work. And I think you've heard this from stakeholders already, but just stepping back, I'm not sure how to address this. I did take some comfort from Miranda's response earlier that with the TREG coming out, there may be a need to reset, alter, and reconsider some priorities given that work, and that's likely very helpful. But again, just as a closing comment, I remain concerned that this is a significant amount of work proposed, a lot of initiatives, varying degrees of complexity, and frankly, interrelated nature of many of them. So I hearken back to the discussion with Miranda that we may need to work with the ISO to see which ones are really mission critical and which ones may need to be deferred in 2022. And I appreciate the ISO's commitment to some flexibility, and likely we'll need to employ that flexibility as we try to get through this list in the new year. So thanks for considering that earlier, and I think we may need to have another discussion like this about priorities in the next number of months. So thanks for considering, I guess, that concern.
Thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
Nicole, you're on mute.
I was just saying thank you, Evan. We certainly appreciate that, and the agility is very important to us in managing to the budget while still achieving our initiatives. So it's critical to us and certainly something we will continue to work through.
Thanks, Nicole.
Looks like we've got a hand up from Chris.
Yeah, Chris, if you want to unmute.
Hi, everybody. I've got a question about how all this is wrapped up and delivered to the board, and I'm curious if once this is all wrapped up, does the ISO benchmark itself against other comparable ISOs? And I don't know how you would do that, like FTE and staffing costs on a per megawatt basis or some other type of quantitative measure. You know, this is the first time I've gone through this process with you guys, and I'm just curious sort of how this is delivered to the board, and is that, you know, is there some type of comparison with similar sized ISOs and what those metrics are that you use to measure and compare?
Chris, I'll jump in on that one. we take this to the board for approval towards the end of the year, and there's also the stakeholder session associated with you folks having an opportunity to talk to our board, and Karen will go through the timelines associated with that in the next couple of slides. As far as the benchmarking, it's something that we have looked at in the past as an ISO group. And in the end, I would say backed away from being able to do it. It is fundamentally very difficult to compare and contrast each and every ISO based on size of organizations, complexity of market structure, their actual mandates. So it becomes a difficult and frankly not particularly valuable exercise in the long run. Mm-hmm. Our focus is to make sure that we're delivering what the province and what stakeholders need and doing it as cost effectively as possible. Doing it any other way doesn't ultimately make a lot of sense. We've had data provided to us from various organizations suggesting that, you know, you can look at costs from different perspectives, whether it's megawatt hours served within the province, et cetera, but there truly are a large number of differences between the jurisdictions and the organizations, and also quite different embedded fixed costs. Obviously, you know, running a small jurisdiction like Alberta still requires a large and frankly costly EMS system and market system. So the comparisons become a little bit contorted, and frankly, the other ISOs weren't interested in spending the time or energy to do that either. So we're taking it from the perspective of we provide as much visibility and information to stakeholders, and we drive our costs as low as we possibly can.
Okay, thanks for that context, Mike.
Thanks, Chris and Mike. Okay, can probably go to the next slide there, please. So we wanted to thank all of these stakeholders that we have participating in this session too, and we really appreciate your feedback. We've got a short poll that Carla will launch, so I'll continue talking as that poll is launched, and if you can please respond to that, that would be appreciated. I believe there's three questions.
Yes, and they'll be in the chat for
in
people
the chat
to
there,
answer.
Yeah. So your stakeholder matrix, it has been posted to the business planning section of the website. It's available there now, and those are due on or before October 15th. So it's just over 2 weeks to provide those to us. And we will provide our responses, ISO replies to those comments when we provide the business plan, which will also be posted to the website. That will be on November 2nd. We'll just go on to the next slide. I wanted to let you know that we will be launching a survey in December on this process, and this is just to get some feedback on the process in general. It's not the result of the BRP or the numbers of the budget. It's more on the process itself. So that will be helpful to us if you complete that survey and give us your feedback. And of course, you can provide me feedback at any time. But we will be launching that survey, and that will be in December. Okay, we'll go to the next slide. October 15th, as I mentioned, the
comment matrices are due back to the ISO. As well, that will be when you can tell us, and you can just send me an email if you would like to participate in the board meeting, which will be on November 17th. So you'll need to let us know your expression of interest by October 15th. And then, as mentioned, November 2nd, we will publish the business plan and budget. And November 9th, we'll need the stakeholder presentations so that the board has some time to review your presentation in advance. And November 17th will be when the stakeholders who have provided the expression of interest will be able to present to the ISO board, and that's generally in the afternoon on November 17th. And then between, as I mentioned, between December 1st and December 15th is when we'll have the survey, and then we will publish the ISO board decision on our website in January, and that will also include ISO replies to the presentation. So we'll derive the sort of comments out of the presentations and include some ISO replies when we publish the ISO board decision. Okay, we'll just go to the next slide. This is just a reminder of the schedule, but I'm sure you've got that down, all the dates. And any final questions? I think we're just about at time here, but we've got some time for some questions.
Doesn't look like we've had any pop up, Karen.
Okay. Well, I really wanted to thank, the ISO presenters for being here and for their the information that they've provided, as well as thank the stakeholders for all their comments that they send in and their participation in this process and their active participation. It's been great to get your comments and hear your questions. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks.